I'm talking today with Adam Skytema, and I've been reading your book, Adam. Congratulations on the publication of Haymaker.
Thank you very much.
It's a wonderful read. As I was telling you before, you made me late for appointments and staying up too late at night, and that's always
a good
thing.
That's high praise. Thanks.
So tell our listeners a little bit first about yourself and your journey as a writer.
Sure. I'm a born and raised Michigander, and I did my studies at Western Michigan University, my master's and PhD, and I live in Grand Rapids. But for the most part, when I first came here, I was studying elementary education as in a bachelor's degree, but came back later because I've always, you know, when I was younger, I had this sort of knack for, especially I think, description and landscapes. And I think when I started to kind of capture some of those Michigan landscapes and such in my writing, I think I started to see some of the directions that I could go to as a writer. And so with my first book, which is a story collection called Freshwater Boys, it's set very much on the lake, and it's primarily descriptions of these real places. And with this book, Haymaker, it's set in the Upper Peninsula on Lake Superior, but it's sort of starting from scratch, kind of world building and creating my own town. So it was some of those descriptive techniques I'd used in the past, but with a whole sort of new layer of invention.
And you teach now, correct, in Grand Rapids?
Yes, I'm an associate professor at Kendall College of Art and Design in downtown Grand Rapids, where I'm one of the few non-visual artists or designers there. So I teach creative writing and literature classes and visual rhetoric. Yep.
But you said earlier you started with elementary education, so did you change your age group there?
I did, and after my student teaching, I never actually went into elementary education, but I sometimes will joke with my students about maybe there are things that are carrying over from working with fifth graders to working with college students. I don't know.
So tell us a little bit about, give us a setup here for Haymaker. What's it about?
Sure. Well, Haymaker is about a small town, like I said, in the Upper Peninsula on Lake Superior, that becomes the chosen site by this group that wants to move there in large numbers to make it a kind of political utopia, a sort of libertarian utopia for themselves. I got the idea 11 years ago. I heard a story on NPR's All Things Considered where there was the town of Grafton, New Hampshire, where a similar type of thing was going on. At the time, I was finishing my first book, and I had a lot of characters that I was playing around with that I wanted to work with, but I had no actual scenario or story. I couldn't figure out how all these very different characters could come together in one story. And when I heard this story on NPR about the town of Grafton and how these people were moving in large numbers and the resistance that they were getting from the townspeople, even though they may have been sympathetic to their political beliefs, they were not on board at all for the rapid changes that were going to come to their community. And I thought that was a fascinating scenario. So I took that and set it in the UP because I have no connection to New Hampshire, and kind of played what if, played make-believe, and kind of amped up the tension and stuff for the purposes of a novel.
Oh, fascinating. I didn't realize this was built on a real scenario.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to say in no way is it sort of nonfiction at all. Just the main scenario, and there were just a few things there. What was important when I heard the original story was I found myself, I think, sympathetic enough to both sides. I think I could sympathize with the townspeople who didn't want these, whether it's some huge corporation or whether it's anything, when something from the outside comes to your small town and it means all of these changes, there's going to be good and there's going to be bad. But I was also sympathetic to this spokesperson that I heard who I think was shocked by the pushback and kind of saw some of his dreams and all of his plans, and he was uprooting his family and his life to move to this town. I think he sort of saw it going up in flames, and I found myself sympathetic to him as well. So I think especially when dealing with, especially nowadays, a novel that deals with politics and political ideas, it can be very easy to tip your hand to find yourself or the reader finding you sort of supporting one side or the other. What I wanted as much as possible with this was to kind of documentary style present both sides as even-handedly as possible and let them speak for themselves.
Oh, and you mastered that. It was
too much so, it sounds like.
It was almost frustrating. I kept trying to figure out this writer's slant one way or the other. And at one moment I would think, oh, he's slanting towards the libertarians. And then again, it's like, no, he's going with the Ubers.
It was difficult. And like I said, I think I have a lot of connections in my own life of people from all sides of the political spectrum. I had the release party for my book last weekend, and there were over 100 people there, and it's sort of like your wedding. There were people from all aspects of my life, from extended family that maybe I don't see a lot, to my current students, to all these others. And I said to them, look, I can tell you right now that there's all parts of the political spectrum are in this room right now. So if you're going to talk with someone you don't know, maybe just talk about the weather or something. So I was conscious of that and wondering sort of to myself, what's this person going to think when he reads it or she reads it? But I didn't want in any way to have a political agenda that's thinly veiled in fiction. I wanted it to be a story. I want it to be character driven, and to show sort of heroes and villains on both sides, the good and bad on both sides, which is like real life, like all of us.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a great thing to do that, because I think sometimes, especially during election years, we start to think of good guys and bad guys.
Sure.
And in your book, you make that point that there's a little bit of good and bad in all of us.
Yeah, and I think it's important to sort of look back and say, oh, look, this character is, at the end of the day, raising his family, or she's coming home after a terrible day of work, and just see the everyday struggles and humanity of everybody.
I imagine people believe what they believe not to be mean or unfair to others, but because they think it's the best way.
And like I said, there's a kind of an idea of creating a political utopia here. And one person's utopia is another person's dystopia, and vice versa, that everyone's doing what they think is best. And they just have very different ideas as to how to get there. And
good reminder for us during election years.
Yes.
So read us the prologue so that we get a taste for your style and what the book is about.
Sure. And this is just setting up kind of a bird's eye view, then sort of lowering down into the town itself. The town is called Haymaker, like the novel, and this is the prologue. The county highway climbs an upland just south of town, and for a minute or two, there above the tree line, you witness God's view of this place people call God's country. A cloud bank approaches from the west, but most of the sky remains startlingly blue. It's July, and for up here, hot. A rich shade of green cloaks the land below. Summer's brief in the north, but here it is, and there are leaves. The green stretches in all directions, but to the north it ends at a distant white ribbon that runs unspooled along its edge. This is the shore, the sand reflecting the sun. It marks the start of that other blue, the lake, which reaches north to meet and become the horizon and then drown it. The road descends, pushing northward. The forest stubbornly gives way to a rigid geometry, the skeleton of almost all American towns, a grid of paved roads, and on the outskirts, a few that are still dirt. After the skeleton comes the skin, houses and businesses where early settlers carved space from woods with blades fresh from the whetstone. Cars and trucks roll down its streets. People saunter down its sidewalks. On the main street, and there's always one, the spine of these American towns, is a man with a camera taking pictures. On the opposite sidewalk, a girl pushes a stroller and spies on him. Take this town and suspend it in time. Hold it with laced fingers like the worker holds the trapped sparrow he's found in the fireplace. Then store the memory away. This town's about to change.
And when you chose the setting of the UP, where are your roots? You obviously know Michigan's Upper Peninsula when you're doing this description.
But as an outsider, too, I mean, all of my roots are here in the Lower Peninsula. So I think that was something... I knew the landscape well enough from having spent a lot of time there, and while working on the novel, I would go up there and write a lot, especially in the Grand Marais area. I'd go up there sometimes in the dead of winter. I was the only person there who wasn't there to snowmobile. And I think in terms of, for the scenario to work, it needed a place where there was both the kind of some of the geographic isolation would have been necessary, but also the kind of rugged individualism of the people. So I knew it well enough, I think, to describe it, but it was still, you know, I'm still an outsider by UP standards. So I think I was trying to be sympathetic too to those people on the outside, and realizing that, you know, if I were to move into Haymaker, I might be one of them as well.
And the title, there's more than one meaning to that, isn't
there?
Sure,
yeah. And it talks a little bit about the historical origins as to how the town got its name of Haymaker. But of course, Haymaker is a big knockout punch. And it's a kind of all or nothing punch. If you connect with it, you're probably going to win. And if you miss, you're probably going to leave yourself pretty badly exposed to a counterpunch on the other side. So this entire enterprise that this group called the Freedom Community is establishing is a pretty wild haymaker. It's they're going for a home run, and if they miss or if they miscalculate, a lot of problems are going to come, and a lot of them do.
There's some good fight scenes in there.
There are some literal fist fights. I had to get that in there as well. Those are fun to write.
Yeah.
I don't get to write many of those.
And how does this story end in real life? We're not going to give away the way how yours ends, but the one in New Hampshire, how did that settle out? Have you followed it since?
I don't. I just know that last year, I think NPR did a follow-up on it of just sort of a 10 years later. I don't know enough about it to say for sure, because at some point while writing this, I didn't want to keep referring to the real thing because I was worried it would influence me too much. But I think, like a lot of these things, certain things come to pass. It was neither as ideal as those maybe originally had planned, and it was probably not as nightmarish as those who feared it might be also.
There were some instances. Now, what I know about libertarianism is they don't like government. You know, the less is more. And yet there were instances in the book where it, when I wondered which way you slanted, that they needed some government help, you know, whether a fire starts or something, or they need their roads plowed. How was your thinking going into those scenes?
Well, I think one of the things that we all hate, I think, you know, I'm a college professor. What young people especially hate about politics so often is the hypocrisy. And I think the stronger you hold your beliefs and sort of preach them, kind of like that haymaker, the more you expose yourself to potential hypocrisy or times where there's always going to be contradictions. There's always going to be times where you can't be as sort of pure in thought and belief as you might wish. And I think both sides, as there's this clash in the book and they're sort of physically confronting each other and kind of psychologically confronting each other and philosophically confronting each other, that they like to point out those places where, you know, told you so. You can't necessarily do this the way you thought you could.
Do you expect any political backlash or probably because you've been able to document it more than slant any way or the other? Has anybody in your life, any of your friends that might have similar or different views?
The book just came out, so they're probably in the midst of reading it now. That'll be interesting. And, you know, it's a fairly small book. I wonder if this were to get picked up or get some wider exposure somewhere. I think the concept itself, people can make a lot of assumptions one way or the other just by hearing the subject and figuring, oh, this is going to put this group in a good or bad light. But again, I think you can sort of read into it what you want to read into it. I think what's important, and I've said this to other people also, you don't have to like politics, hopefully, to like the book. If you're somebody who's bored or who sort of hates politics, there are characters in this story who want nothing to do with politics. They just want to live their life, and they want their town to go back to normal, and they are sick of the circus that it's become because of the politics. So I think, again, with 15 months till the presidential election or whatever, the circus is going to be coming to everyone's town, and we'll all feel that way at some point.
Are you planning any readings up in the UP?
I don't have any scheduled, but I would assume that some will come to it, and I have contacts up at Northern Michigan University, and I've done readings up in the UP in the past. I don't want Haymaker to seem like it is itself representative of the UP or the people of the UP at all. I think the landscape is very much, I tried to get that right, but I wanted this to be a kind of eccentric, out there, small town that could be anywhere in the United States in many ways, not representative of, or, you know, a kind of sampling of what average small town life would be in the UP, not at all.
I think the UP was a good choice, though. I've lived up there for a short while, and you capture that sense of, you live in a place of your own. You're kind of separate from every other place. And I think places that are very wilderness-oriented can be that way.
Yes.
Rugged individuals.
Sure. And I think as the weather plays a significant role in some of the events of the book. And I think you needed a place, too, where life can stop, where Mother Nature can still take control and the blizzards can hit and things like that.
So why do you think these people that moved en masse into this little town, why didn't they start a town of their own? Why did they have to take over, in a way, another town? How does that work?
Partly, I think, the sheer logistics. And there was this way of creating, and again, some of the characters get caught in their own contradictions, too, where they kind of want it both ways. They want to have their own community within a community, and they create this sort of development that's almost like a gated community that's separate, but they want to integrate with the town itself. And I think that's part of the reason that their message falls flat with so many of the locals is, what is it? Are you wanting to separate yourself and do something that seems sort of ominous, sort of separate? In many ways, I think they like the idea of move into a place that has history that in many ways looks like a quaint small town Americana, sort of like it's described in that prologue. There's a main street, there are shops, there's a lovely park, and to sort of move to a place and say, this is the America we've always dreamed of, you know, this American utopia, whether or not that ever existed. But there's a sense that we can claim that, and we're not going to completely start it from scratch as well, but some of it has to come from new developments too.
And you have a reading coming up in Kalamazoo.
Yes, Tuesday, May 19th at Michigan News from 6 to 8. I'll be there on hand, downtown Kalamazoo. I'll be reading from Haymaker. I'll be signing books. Books will be for sale. And I'm looking forward to it. I know Dean is great there at Michigan News, and she brings in people. I get to meet new people. I know some of my old Western friends and other people will be showing up as well. So I'm really looking forward to it.
What new projects are underway, Adam?
I recently completed a short story collection that is called The Things We Do That Make No Sense. And it's, again, a collection of stories that deals with the sort of rituals, the little everyday things that we do, some kind of the sacred rituals, some the secular rituals that on the surface, they don't seem to make a lot of sense as to why we do them, but we create a lot of meaning out of them. And but also some of the sort of bad choices we make that make no sense, and why do we do it, and why do we keep doing them? So that's finished, and now it's just a blank slate. It's kind of exhilarating and terrifying, but I'm not sure what my next project is. And it's sort of, but the last time I was in this situation, Haymaker came out of it. So
there you
we'll
go.
See. Yep.
Yeah. Nature doesn't like a vacuum.
That's
something
right.
will fill it very soon.
That's right.
And then you can come back and talk to us about
I'd
that.
I'd love to.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you so much.